Welcome to Ink in Your Veins. I'm your host, Rachel Herron. In this podcast, I talk to authors about the best things they've learned about writing so we can try those things too. I'll keep each episode short so you can get back to writing. Well, hello, Sasha Black.
Hello, darling.
And hello.
Hello, ladies.
Joanna Penn.
Yes.
I'm excited to be here, but also I listen to this normally and I just want to hear you two have a conversation. So I just might sit here and just listen.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
No.
I actually don't even know why this came up. I think it was maybe Sasha and I both thinking of this. We just wanted to chat with you as well.
Well, we always talk about Jo.
That's
She's
it.
Like our favorite person. So it did feel like a natural extension.
And I feel gratified because, and we should just say, I just checked your Kickstarter, which has gone over 20 grand pounds.
Oh,
that's like 40,000 New Zealand dollars.
And for people who, most people listen to this, and Sasha is gibbering, just like silently.
Congratulations.
Honestly,
yeah, I mean, I really genuinely did not think I would go over five. And so I've learned so many things about, you know, not putting all of the stretch goals really close together and like all the rest of it. But also, oh, just wow. Feel like maybe I should have listened to someone, I think the surname's Penn, like earlier on.
Well, I think that's what, but you know, this is why, well, one of the reasons I love you, Sasha, is because you don't just listen to stuff, you put it into action, like a lot faster than most people. And I've been talking about Kickstarter for a while and Shopify for longer, and I kept kind of saying to you, oh, you're gonna want to do it, and he's like, no. And now look at you. And Rachel also, Shopify, Kickstarter coming, I mean, the ladies.
I feel like I'm speeding up though. Like the distance between you saying it and me doing it is definitely decreasing.
When does your Kickstarter really close?
7 days today, which is why I did the flat. So what happened is I've been sitting around 19 for a few days, and I was like, oh, I really want to like cross 20, because obviously this was never even in my sphere of possible. But now I'm here. I was like, we're really close to 20K. So I put up a flash reward earlier, and then also showed the not safe for work up, which almost always everybody goes and backs because of the not safe for work up. So I was holding on to this sketch, and then I showed it, and it literally took about 15 minutes to cross over, and I was like,
oh my goodness. And it happened because you asked, and because you were thinking about it, and you still got 7 days to go. And isn't there always the bump at the end as well?
Apparently so.
Yeah, well, and this is one of the tips for Kickstarter. This is why you need to do, and in fact, one of your lessons learned, I think, is to have a longer pre-launch, because the people who sign up on the pre-launch, who register their interest, they all get emailed 24 hours before the end or 48 hours, and then I think again just before it finishes. So, and that's part of Kickstarter marketing itself. And so having a really long pre-launch page, all the language is different. So yeah, I will just say that mine is up at jfpen.com/destiny.
I love
Sphere
it.
Of destiny, I should say. And what's interesting, of course, is that there are a lot of fantasy and romantasy books on Kickstarter. There are hardly any action adventure thrillers. So I think I'm going to have to change my expectations a lot. But Rachel, what about yours? Because you were
mine is going
about
to pre-launch today. So
great.
Yeah. Finally.
Do you have a URL for people?
Yeah, let's make it rachelherron.com/unstuck. And
Wait.
I've got the books, I've got the paperback and the hardcover. I don't have fancy hardcover like you folks, but I've got a beautiful hardcover. And yeah, I just need to do the pre-launch. The thing that has been slowing me down is I've been editing a book that's
needs to get to my editor and I need to edit the audio, which, you know, takes so long, like just taking out all of those extra words. But it's really important to me to have the audio out at the really close to when I can launch it. I don't want to do a Kickstarter and then be fulfilling the audio. You always, Joe, you always get the stuff ready beforehand, right? It's all ready to go.
As much as possible, because yeah, otherwise, well, Sasha, you haven't quite hit fulfillment phase, but fulfillment phase can also be quite difficult with a lot more than you expect. But that will be your lessons learned after that section.
Well, I sat today with a spreadsheet and was like, okay, we need to get all of the links, everything. So I now have a spreadsheet of everything that needs ordering. The one thing I don't have sorted is the box sizes, because I had some good advice from somebody who said, oh, put your current series as an add-on, which I was like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Loads of people have done it, but that now completely fucks the box sizes that I originally sorted. So
no, I would, unless they're signed. Are they signed or no?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I know. It's always like I've learnt loads of stuff.
This could majorly impact your shipping price. So I
pre-did that. I pre-checked. Yeah. I pre-checked.
But if you don't
know
the size of the box, how do you know the shipping price?
Because Book Vault are doing the shipping and they made me go in and put the order together on Book Vault. So, and we checked, basically he said it's not really on the dimensions, it's on the weight. And he told me I had quite a lot in the weight brackets.
Okay.
So I did like the max. Yeah. So, I mean, we did check all of that before it went, but I didn't think of the boxes themselves. So that is a bit of a sticky one that I've got to try and
but these out. Are all the these are all the things that actually make this very interesting, and we all love learning things, and the interesting side of Kickstarter is all the stuff that we haven't done because we've been all digital for so long. And so I don't know, so Rachel, how are you managing it from New Zealand?
It's rough. I'm using Lulu
I
in
love
the States.
How positive you are about that. It's rough. It's so positive.
No, it's actually, but I think I'm going, it's rough trying to decide, like, make all the tiny decisions about the actual publishing of the books. All of the other things I think are super fun for me, like which are the levels and what I'm going to provide, but I'm doing a lot less physical, tangible stuff. I'm doing more like you, Joe. I'm doing books and services more. I'm doing some high price coaching calls and stuff like that, which will be easy to fulfill and less mailing. Because I also have a little bit of a mental block around mailing things. I just hate doing it. Even postcards, I hate mailing anything. So I need to keep myself away from that end of it. May I ask you, Joanna, what is your favorite thing to fulfill in a Kickstarter? Because you're going into your third now. Like is it the book itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, the fulfillment is literally, because I organized so much of it earlier, it literally is just get it done as fast as possible, which I talked about on my show a few weeks ago, is that they didn't let me put up the pre-launch page for Spear of Destiny because they kind of thought I fulfilled it too quickly.
I heard you say that. You're like, maybe she was a scammer because it.
They were like, you clearly
finished and you fulfilled. Right.
But Sasha knows because she was with me in Peterborough. It was a week after it finished. I didn't even get the payment from Kickstarter before I went and signed all the books and got them all in the post because I just wanted to get it done before Christmas. But I think I really enjoy the, you know, on the video, I've got the Writing the Shadow and I've got the Pilgrimage books. I'm more proud of those as physical objects. Yeah. And I now, what a nightmare is how much I want to go and redo all the other books. But that's not very practical. So with Spear of Destiny, it's a book 13 in my Arcane series. So it's going to be a hard sell in many, many ways. But I'm going to do like an extended author's note with more like an essay around the process. Not the process, I guess the places I've been. And I've just come back from Vienna, you know, trip, Nuremberg. And also I'm going to have photos, non-fiction, actual photos in the back of the novel for the hardback and a separate cover. So I guess what I like is this very creative way of thinking. And also we're forced to do a launch, which I feel like I've been quite lazy about for so long.
I think that's just the worst part. I hate launching, and I'm always lazy as well. That is so cool. But of all numbers to launch into the series, 13 is a great one because you can play on that. This is lucky number 13. This is there's something in there.
Yeah, you're right. There was a short story, but I guess that's 12 and a half. That could be 12 and a half. So this is 13. But I mean, I'm still in first draft. Actually, I was going to mention this to you ladies, is that I realized I have not written a full novel, a full length novel, since before the pandemic.
How does it feel?
Audio listeners, they are gaping mouth to mouth.
We both gaped. How does it feel to be writing fiction?
It's really, I've written fiction. I've written two novellas. I've written several short stories. I've written a memoir. I've written nonfiction. And I rewrote the first three novels of the Arcane series. So I've written, but I haven't done a full length novel. And I've realized that it needs more plot.
I always have that problem. That's the worst part.
Well, it's like, okay, this is now 40,000 words. So either it is another novella, or I need to make it longer. It's quite interesting getting to that point. But I wondered if there's other things that we haven't done since before. I haven't seen you, Rachel, since before the pandemic.
Yeah. And I haven't launched anything in a while. I've been writing and revising a lot, but Unstuck will be the first book I've launched in a long time. And I, you know, then Sasha and I are always talking about it. I feel like I've got all these revision things in the air, and Kickstarter is making me land them. I don't know, Joe, though. I don't hate that idea of redoing all your books into Kickstarter. It would take an immense amount of effort.
Why wouldn't you do more, right?
Blocks of three, so kickstart three together and then another three. Then it's only three full Kickstarters, you know, rather than 12.
I don't know. I've just got all these other things I want to do and stuff I want to write. But it's like, I think talking about feeling proud of our work, I am, of course, proud of the books I've written, but I feel there's something even more pride around holding something that is also a beautiful object. Sasha, like your...
Oh my
gosh. Your rainbow.
Rainbow.
Come on. Oh.
I think it's... So I always talk about how I annotate loads of books. And I think there is something to that engagement, that physical engagement with a book. And as indie authors, yes, okay, we commission the cover, but we're not really, you know, vellum is a very quick process if you use vellum or Atticus. Yeah. So we don't really engage with the packaging of it so much. Mm. And so I think there's something to the fact that we are really, really hands-on, like, fingers in the cookie pie or whatever the phrase is, you know, we're getting dirty with the actual physical creation of it. And so we feel more attached to it, more engaged with it. Like I certainly have never been this excited for a launch. And it's not just the ridiculous money on Kickstarter. It is because it's really pretty. Mm. It's really pretty. And like, yeah.
I think this is the other thing that people don't realize. I've answered a lot of questions about this. People keep saying to me, oh, it's okay for you because you have an audience. And I have to kind of remind people, like, so, you know, of course we support each other as friends, but most of the things I've backed over the last decade on Kickstarter, I don't know the creator. Mm-hmm. I may never back another book by the creator, but mm-hmm. that particular book or generally book caught my eye or hit me on the email or whatever it was. And I was like, yes, I want that. And I've bought it. Like I've just got on the floor here, 1,000 Libraries that just arrived. It's like $150. It was printed in Melbourne. And I was just like, I love this. I want this book. I'm going to buy it. And so the behavior of buyers on Kickstarter is so different to buyers on KU, for example. Now, it's the same, mostly the same content, but it's such a different mindset of the type of buyer, and the average order value on Kickstarter is so different. And I just want to encourage people who say, oh, I don't have an audience, so I could never do a Kickstarter. I don't think that's the point.
Yeah, I think my partner almost exclusively buys, all of her Kickstarter purchases have always been books by people she doesn't know, because she's one of the people who uses Kickstarter, and there's not very many platforms that are like this, as a discovery tool. She likes to, it's amusing to her. She goes on to Kickstarter and she scrolls until she finds something fascinating and plunks some money down. And then she 100% of the time forgets about it. And it always takes, it's, you know, no one else is Joanna Penn. So 7 or 8 months later, something arrives in the mail that's beautiful and weird and a book she'd completely forgotten about. And that's what she loves about it. So it truly is another discovery tool.
I've found myself buying a lot of not safe for work queer comics. Like, I don't read comics, but I do now because they're on Kickstarter.
Wait, you're just looking at the pictures. Come on.
What? Everyone else gets them.
There's words in there.
Some. Oh, yeah. But yeah, and I have been looking at other like products as well, because there's a lot of really innovative products on there, and some, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, I just like pretty things, and sometimes it's really pretty, and then I'm like, oh, I bought that one.
But then it's research as the type of products that you think you might do another time. That's how I think about it. I get it, because I need to know whether I could do something similar.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Does that make it a tax write-off as well?
Absolutely.
100%. You should definitely, and everyone listening should take our tax advice. Because we're tax experts. We are not.
Oh, dear me.
So that is exciting. So we're all doing that. And I want to know, Sasha, because I forget everything. After it launches, how long will it be on just your Shopify before it goes to the other places?
So on the 27th of February, I have brought something. You may recognize it.
That's called Your Author Business Plan. And I believe it's by a certain Joanna Penn.
So I've read this book more than once, but
I have too. It's great.
Yeah, I know it is great. But I keep a lot of information in my brain, and I just need to get it on the page. So I'm going to use the structure to get it on the page.
That's a great idea, because I read the book and I thought the same thing, and I've never done it. I'm like, I must externalize that plan someday, and I still haven't.
Because it makes me feel better, because it takes it out of my brain. Anywho, predictably Kickstarter is now changing everything. So, I'm going to change the model and change how I launch and release things. So at the moment, this one is releasing everywhere all at once. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually quite glad I did do the Kickstarter at the same time. I might not do that next time, but I think it's actually just lifted everything. Mm-hmm. I think for my stress level, I might not do that next time. But I have seen the highest pre-orders. I've seen the highest orders on Shopify. I've just seen the highest everything. So I think it probably was worth doing it all together. But yeah, I think next time I will probably stagger it. But to do that, it means it's less task and finish. What I really like about this time is that, yes, okay, it was a bit of a clusterfuck launching a Kickstarter and it on Shopify and it on Amazon, all the rest of the stores. But it's over and done with. So I'm basically trying to get to the point where after Seville and London Book Fair, I've said no to everything. So I've got 4.5 clear months to write 4 books before New Zealand. So I don't know if I've actually answered your question, but I'm trying to reshift things, because either I need more help or I need to just think about how I'm like Gantt charting them. Because I don't cope well if I'm in writing mode and having to do launchy bits. I don't really like that.
Yeah, I have a really good solution for that. I just don't launch anything. And when I do, launch a book, I send one email. And I say, oh, you might want to get it. And it's so funny, because I know all the best practices. I know all of them, and I know how to sell. And here's the thing. I don't mind being sold to. When a writer I love is selling me something and telling me about it, I'm like, well, thank God. Let me go click that and buy that. And I still don't practice what I preach.
But I think that's another reason why I like Kickstarter, is because I think I'm happy with like the 15-day process. That's about as much as I can sustain any well, I can't even sustain energy for 15 days. But you know what I mean? It's like you can manage to schedule something every day for 15 days and then it's done. And then you fulfill and then you, normal people might have a rest sometimes.
What's that?
I think you'll learn in about 10 years.
I think she might go a little bit longer than we did. But yeah, Joanna and I are learning.
Oh, do you know what? I was thinking about this, though. I do think, because I had the conversation with Orna Ross about this, and she said that there's a number. And I know, Sasha, that you either hit the number or you're getting close to the number. I think once you're stable with your number, you relax a bit. So, Rachel, you said yes. What do you mean by that?
You mean financial number, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was so much hustle for me for so long to hit the, and it was, and I'll just be honest, it was over six figures for me, and that's what I needed.
Me
and
too.
Now that and now I'm in multiple six figures, very very low multiples, but that's what I needed, because I'm also taking care of the whole household. Lala's still just working for me but not bringing in actual cash, but once that is hit, I allow myself to not freak out and to that I'm not producing. But for 15 years, for 15 solid years, I was on a hamster wheel and I never stopped moving and I loved it. But my body does like a rest now. And I don't know. It just feels more calm in my brain. I am actually able to rest sometimes and I'm still very, 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 very bad at it. But I know now that it's important. And Joanna, you're always, again, you tell us to do things. And I think a lot of the world is really slow to take you up on it. And Sasha and I are a little bit faster. But now, like, I'm doing weight training and I'm,
you know, I heard you hurt your back though.
Oh, in my first go, because she said to do 30 push-ups. And if you ever tell me to do anything, I will do it. Especially if I'm at 20 and I'm like, I can barely move. She's like, no, you got this. You could do it.
Okay, and you need a different trainer.
Well, I think normal people would have said, no, I'm done. I'm tapping out right here. But I don't, because I have too high a competition. So if she says I can, then I will. And then my trapezius went in spasm for like 4 days. I literally couldn't use my arm. So we had a conversation about that. We did have a conversation. I said, you can't challenge me to do anything because I will do it. But understanding, like, once you hit the number, once I don't know, Joe, and both of you, I would love you to answer this. I don't love that finances are a way for me to gauge where I am, but they are useful. Like, when I have hit certain numbers in my career, I go, yes, that's what I wanted to do. And now I have the belief that I can do that. And it's just easier. It's just, everything is easier moving forward. Did you find that, Joanna?
I know I want to ask Sasha first. Do you think that you might relax a bit and take more breaks when you consistently hit that number? Let's say for 3 years in a row, if you're like, okay, 3 years of a six-figure number, will you feel like, okay, I can relax a bit more? Or do you think you'll just want to keep going?
So what's interesting is that, and you're all going to laugh at me, I feel like I would never have given myself 4 months to just write, ever. If I hadn't have hit six figures, I don't think I'd have done this. I'd have written, launched, written, launched, written, launched. But because I have, I feel like I can take that financial risk because I know there's a little bit in the bank that actually it will be fine if I don't hit as much next month or whatever. And I have said no to some really big things in the next 4 months, 4 or 5 months, whatever it is. And I never, ever would have done that, ever. I'd have just broken myself saying yes to do all of them. I think probably once there is more money in the bank and there's, you know, a bigger pension or whatever, I think I'd probably, I don't know that my intensity will decrease because I think I just am really intense. But I will probably take more holidays and go on more research trips. And therefore those things will inevitably, the consequences that I work less hours. And I will probably do, you know, more fun things. But whether or not I actually slowed, I don't think I know how. I don't think I know how to slow down. I just constantly
You do not. We will
crave
confirm
a win.
That for you.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because I have many times, I don't know about you, Rachel, with this, when you hit a certain level and you think, okay, for me to take a step up, I have to change the way I run
yes.
my business.
Yes.
I and so we see the indie authors who are making seven figures or multi seven mm-hmm. figures. They might have co-writers or ghostwriters, or they have they do a lot of books, but they also have assistants.
Yeah.
They have employees, they have processes. I mean, you say I'm organized, but I still have never written down an SOP or a standard operating procedure,
that makes
whatever
me
it
feel
is.
Better.
I just never have. And then I would have to change how I like to do things in order to step up a level. Now, of course, you can bring in big chunks. So, for example, you know, pitching for a movie deal or something yeah. like that. But in terms of a consistent business every year, which is what we all want because we like our lives, then I would have to change it. So when I got to a certain, and it's interesting, I've kind of been at the same level for 7 years. So Rachel, mm-hmm. you're nodding too. Mm-hmm. Like, and to do that takes, I mean, I still love working all the time, but I take longer. Like I said, I haven't written a whole novel and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm much more relaxed about it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Can I make a big confession? And this is something I'm still practicing and working on, but I am, I've only been doing it for like less than a month. So this is the way I roll. But I'm trying to work 6 hours a day. I work 3 hours in the
like
morning.
With breaks, or is that full?
3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon. I never take breaks. I'm one of those people who, like, I will work 10-hour days and I will go into the kitchen and stand up and eat a quesadilla and then go back to work. And that comes from, you know, working in 911 so long, where we would work 12 to 18 hours without even a 10-minute break. You would just get to go pee and that was it, even though it's totally illegal, but that's what everybody did. And I have been getting more done. And we've read the studies where when you work less and have more time off, you get more done, but I didn't actually believe it. So I had been experimenting with just 9 to noon working, and then 1 to 4 working, and then stopping. And it's been fantastic. But it goes exactly to what you're saying, Joe, that like I have hit a point where it is, and I never thought I would get to this point, but it is actually enough. I have enough. And in order to be wildly rich beyond my wildest dreams and bring in the 7 and 8 figures, I know that I have the capacity to do that. And it would take a lifestyle change that I'm not willing to do. I am absolutely not willing to do it. And I think it's easier living in New Zealand. And maybe it's the same way in the UK, but the US is not. We don't know what enough is. There's no enough. There's never enough. And in New Zealand, everybody around me does enough. You remember this, Joe, from when you're here.
Oh,
people
yeah,
take
yeah.
so much time off. Nobody works past four.
You go swimming or scuba diving or fishing
every day. And that has led to a higher quality of life and a real appreciation for enough. However, I would, you know, I was always like more, but by stepping back from teaching a little bit this year, there's a wildly huge potential that I will make less this year than I did last year. And that's fine. That's what I want in order to have more writing time. So I don't know. It's been a big change. Sasha, what does your brain do that when we say that? You're like, oh God.
No.
Are they the old boring people?
Am I gonna be like that in 10 years?
No, I think two things. The first one is on enough, and I'll address that second. But the first one is on that kind of stopping. So I literally sent a voice memo on WhatsApp today to a friend who I said, the 4 months after London Book Fair, I want to spend the morning writing my 6,000 words, and I'm gonna sit on my ass in my throne and read all afternoon. And
yes.
that's what I want to do. And I don't think I've ever said anything like that before, ever. Or
you
I want to sit and read
so
my
much
coffee
done.
Table books. Or mm-hmm. I want to go and do a course because I want to learn. I'm a learner, wants to learn something. I want to do mm-hmm. the fun stuff, even if the fun stuff some people think is nerdy and work, but it's not to me. So yeah, I do think there is some, and it has been a very recent shift. The second thing I would say is that I've started therapy because I want to feel enough and for a variety of different things. And so I wonder if like maybe some of that will eventually also help me to just stop, or not stop, but be okay with slowing down sometimes, you know?
Mm. God, we're so mature.
But also, but did everyone see the titty picture I sent on Kickstarter?
I did.
Okay, I just thought I'd lower the tone.
No. I think it was a very mature titty picture, like one of the best I've ever
seen. Was it the not safe for work banner? Like, that was what made it mature, wasn't it?
Maybe. But I do think that we all have an overarching feature that we share is that, like, when I say that I'm working 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon, I'm also doing things all the time. I still get up at 6 and I'm busy until 9 when I start I'm learning and I'm journaling and I'm working out and none of us sit still very much unless we're reading, which is really, really, really important. But I don't think that's going to change. And I think if you wrote all morning and read all afternoon actively, because that's the way we do everything, you would be, the words would pour out. I have a hard time believing you're going to do that.
Well, so do I. I mean, the reason I'm saying it out loud is because it makes me more accountable to do it. And I even said to my friend, I really want to do this, but I know I'm going to find it difficult. But in order to outpour for 4 months, yes, I have to increase my input. It's literally, I can correlate it on a graph.
Me too.
The amount I input is directly proportional to the amount I can output. So actually, if I frame it like that, then in my brain, I'm like, no, this is work. And therefore, I'll do it, even though it's also relaxing. See, this is why I need therapy, right?
It's the best kind of work. It's the best.
Yeah.
We are going to follow up with you on that. So let's pivot a little bit, and because we did have one topic that we were kind of thinking about talking about, knowing that we probably wouldn't hit it. But let's talk about community. Can we talk about community and friends? And I think, Sasha, I want to start. Let's start with you, because you were saying within the last year that you wanted more in-person writing friends. And how has that been going? How has creating community been going? How do you feel about it?
So I have a question back to you guys first. I think
it's terrible when you have 3 podcast hosts.
I know, right? Yeah, let me turn this back on you.
Yeah, we're all used to being in charge. I know. This is 3 alpha women here.
Oh, I love it though. So I do have more in-person friends. I have a question though. I think there are 2 types of writer. There are more than 2, but for the purposes of this, there are 2 types of writer. There are writers who have icons for their profile pictures. They spend a lot of money on advertising and they don't necessarily have a public persona. And then there's us 3 who have a public persona. And I wanted to ask about boundaries and how you guys deal with keeping some pieces of yourself private. So I've had some things happen and I'm feeling like maybe I need a work phone and a private phone. Maybe I need to like make some more separation. And there are like certain people in the community who I would say are in my inner circle. And then there are certain people that are not. And like, I think when you have that public persona, people feel like they know you really well or that they're closer to you than they might necessarily be. And so I just wondered how you guys deal with the boundaries and how, yeah, just talk to me about those boundaries in this context.
Mm. Do you want to go first, Joe?
Oh, I totally get you. And it is, and it sounds a bit like a dickish thing to say, but you have to be very careful. And I know Rachel's sober, but I'm not sober, and Sasha also not sober, right? And I have to be very careful who I have a drink with, because when I have a drink, I tend to say things. And some people record stuff, some people take pictures. And if you're with someone who also has something to lose, it's terrible, but maybe this is helping. Sasha is nodding. Rachel and Sasha are nodding. Mm-hmm. But when you with people who also have a public persona, you almost trust them more because you both have potentially things that could be impacted. Not that I behave terribly badly or anything, you know, at things, but I have had conversations with people where I assumed it was private. And I mean, even with you, both of you, we will still say, or I'll say on email, you know, this is private, you know, even though it could, just to be sure. But things turn up places. Like, people need to realize, people take screenshots of private social media stuff, or, you know, people do stuff. And Yeah, you do have to be careful about who you need to be open enough to trust people, but also don't go too far. Is that what you meant, really?
Yeah, I think so. And I've not necessarily been feeling entirely safe to be myself. That's the word. It is the word. I hate that is the word, but that is the word. And it's sort of like a mental safety, not necessarily a physical safety. I think I'd probably, you know, walk around far too much like an angry lesbian for anybody to, you know, come at me. But, you know, it's like that sort of mental safety and having a space that feels safe with people that I feel safe to talk to. And because, yes, I'm myself always, but there are places where I can be more myself.
Yes.
And I think I've been realizing that I've got some of that wrong and I need to do something to shift it. Yeah. So
I think the more that the deeper I went into this and thinking about it, and, you know, Clifton Strengths Relator has told me everything I need to know. Like, I have high relator, which means that I have a few people who I let in. Like, I have one or two people that I let in really close, and I have a few more here and a few more here. But really, the person I keep most private is myself. And I have this one place in my visual house where I can go up to the attic by myself, and I need to be able to do that. But I also love people so much. I have learned over the years how to trust, like the trust button in me now. It could get taken advantage of, but it hasn't in a really, really long time, because I feel like the trust level has gotten to a place where I recognize it. Like, both, I have a friendship with Sasha and I have a friendship with Joanna where we have chats at least a few times a year that are off air, and we never say, this is confidential. And we talk about things that are confidential, and I 100% trust that I'm not saying that one should not have to say that, but we don't, because we're at that level of trust. You know that when I share something that I would never share on the podcast, you're not going to tell anybody else. And that is perhaps easier because we do have that public facing brand, but that level of being able to find trust in people, I feel like I can now bring that into the real world. And I'm just as selective when I go out into writers' communities, and I've mentioned this before, and this sounds a little dickish. This is my dickish part, but I like to go into a writers' community, like into a room with writers, and look around and listen for a while. Just sit and listen to everybody speak and pick them, and say, that is someone I could trust. That is somebody I could love. And at my first RWNZ, Romance Writers of New Zealand meeting here that I ever went to, there were three women, and I looked around the room. And AK Mulford was one of them, and two other who will be listening to the show. And I remember looking at them and thinking, those could be my best friends. And so then we made it happen. And they are my best writing friends now here in New Zealand. And learning to trust my gut on that. These are the people who will, you know, lay everything down and always keep me safe. Do you ever have that feeling where you go, like, you, it's an,
I've never had that feeling.
Really? it takes intentional work, and maybe it's my Pollyanna aspect, but
I think, I don't know, Clifton Strengths wise, or I have like all my relationship ones are right down the bottom. I kind of think of myself, I like the Jack Reacher books, because he actually has a quote. Jack Reacher says it in the books. 90, if there's out of 100 people, 99 people will sit around the fire and one will be out with the wolves. And that's kind of how I feel like I am, like what you're talking about there in that room. I'm like, no, thank you.
But I would have, if I had met you at the RWNZ meeting, there's a strong possibility that I would have sidled up and said, can I get your number? Do you want to get coffee?
And I would have said, you weirdo. No one has my number.
you need a separate phone for that.
No, I just don't. I got really mad, actually. I don't know how. Maybe this is what's happening to you, Sasha. Somebody somehow got my number and WhatsApped me. I barely can say it, let alone use it. And I was like, and they asked me something about the writing world. And I was like, who even is this person? And I had to like delete them and block them. And later on, I found they were like the friend of a friend of whatever. And maybe that's normal for some people, but I'm like, seriously? I just think that's so rude. Is that not an English thing?
I don't like business coming over my phone, period. Period.
That is why business I need a second phone. Come over my phone. Mm. Yeah.
Or Sasha, you either need a different phone or bigger, stronger boundaries.
Yeah, that too. And that's one of the things that I think is amazing about you, Joe, because your boundaries are
your boundaries are
granite
brilliant.
Solid. Yeah. Like, they're incredible. Yeah. But also, and what I love about you is that you give so much to the community and actually keep so much back of yourself. Mm-hmm. And like, that is, I need to learn that, because I have given, I give what I want to give, but also there's some of the personal things that I think I probably need to pull back on. And so, yeah,
So just... you and I are more alike in that. And I have had my blog since 2002, before, you know, when we were still saying weblog. It was a journal online. Nobody had them. It was just like the knitters and people doing porn.
MySpace. That was it. Back in MySpace.
Yeah. And it was, and I got like millions of hits a year. I was literally a famous knitter. People would recognize my wife in public and come up and talk about her sweaters. Like, it was that kind of thing. But back then, so 22 years ago, I started getting that feeling. Like, people would come up and they would be my best friend because they had been reading me for so long. And it got to a place where I just really love it. Now I really love that feeling. And I also know that they don't know everything. They know a lot, and that's okay. And you are naturally a giver of a lot of information.
It's not about the information.
It's about what?
You have been talking about sex a lot. Is that the problem?
Oh.
No.
Oh, my heart just dropped. I was like, oh God, I would die.
That's the thing. So I'm not saying I'm going to talk. So I'm obviously very authentic on the podcast. And, you know, I talk about all the feelings or whatever. And like, all of the stuff that I'm doing. But like, I just feel like I have no house in my brain that is just for me, you know, or just for my inner circle. And like, I just feel like I'm too accessible, and that, I think that's it. I mean, I can tell you other stuff like offline, but yeah, I just am feeling like I need to go, okay, hold on a second. I need to just keep a few more pieces just for me. And Chloe, so my wife is a high relator, and she's a really, really good judge of character. And I'm a terrible judge of character. I always I always believe the best in everybody. I always think everybody is out to be positive and helpful and kind. And I just think I've experienced one too many things that are not that way. And I think that has maybe jaded me slightly over the last couple of years. And yeah, so now I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm still going to keep giving because that's who I am. But also, I'm now going to slam some boundaries down and keep a little bit more for myself and have a few safe spaces, especially because like, my office is inside my house. So there's like, even that is not a boundary. And then if I have everything on my phone as well, I can't just go and sit on the sofa and just text my friends. Because it's fucking work going to pop up on it.
Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah.
I like how we're all kind of, though, I think, coming to a balance that works for us. Because Joe, over, and tell me if I'm wrong, but over the years, I've been listening to you for a very long time, like since early days of your show. And you give more of your personal self now, I think.
But still curated.
It's always curated, always.
Yeah, and it has to be
in real life too. I mean, even people who don't write have to do that, you know?
Yeah, and it's because this is part of our job. And I guess for people listening too, we're not saying don't come and say hi to us if we see you.
Oh my God. Good Lord.
Yeah, no.
That's not what we mean.
Our groups are different. Our Patreon people and our communities are there because we love them.
Yeah, and so but hopefully people understand the difference. What's interesting, I think, writers as a group, there's some people in the writing space. I think creative people have different personality types, obviously. Some people might not understand boundaries as much as other people, but and I'm allowed to swear on this podcast, right? But,
yes, you are.
I have like a resting fuck off face. Which I utilize when necessary, like, you know, I don't but you're right. I am a different personality to both of you, though. I have a few close friends, or not even a few. And I, you know, I like being on my own a lot. But it's interesting, Sasha mentioned the word jaded, and I did want to bring this up with the pair of you, because this is something that I and we've all been around a while now, and there comes a point where you start wondering, am I the jaded one? I don't want to be the person who's been around too long. And yeah, Rachel's nodding, and I wonder sometimes, is it, and you know, I say this every year on my show, is it time for me to stop being this person? And I'm, you know, sort of playing with the idea of being JF Penn. And what does that mean for the podcast? There's also, we in Vegas, we saw the end of 20 Books Vegas. We're seeing the kind of coming to an end of the rapid release model, the kind of KU only model. We're seeing a change in the indie industry. We're seeing a change in the people who were leaders. There's been some behavior in the community that we won't mention specifics of, but you know, people who I think people will understand what I mean.
Yeah,
But
no.
it's we've kind of, and I feel like, is it just a changing of the guard? Is that just a normal situation in a maturing industry? What, I don't know. What do you, Rachel, you've been around longer. What do you feel?
I feel a lot of things. I feel panic sometimes. Like I really am, I think, very much like you in that I want to know and I want to always be thinking, do I need to step sideways, step back, do something differently, because what I desperately don't want to be is the person clinging with all of her fingers on to trying to do things the exact same way. And we see those people in every industry, and we don't want to be that. So I want to get older really gracefully and lovely and still helping as much as I can and doing exactly what I love, but not clinging. And there's some fear around that. I think there's always some fear. And fear for me always looks like trying to gather things up real tightly and hold everything. So I need to remember that everything does change. And I do love that we're having this conversation with Sasha, who's, you know, you're
The new
35-ish,
god.
30. You're the, how old are you?
37.
So
Nearly,
you know,
next
you're a
month
good
in March.
14 years younger than me. And that's a big deal. And you know, and there are going to be people coming in that are younger than you, and I can't remember where we were going. What was the question, Joanne?
It was more about, does there come a point where the old has to die and the new takes the reins?
Well, I think Paddy Finn said it perfectly on your podcast. I have not stopped thinking about what he said. I'm sure it was him. Correct me if I'm wrong. But he said this, the any industry is not about survival of the fittest. It's about survival of the most adaptable. And I
Yes, it was
literally
him.
stopped what I was doing, replayed it, and like had to take a second because I was like, oh my God. And so I don't, I think age is just a number. I think it is a race to see who is the most adaptable, who is willing to adapt the hardest, fastest, biggest, best. And the guard doesn't have to change if you are changing enough, right? Like, yes, okay, eventually we all die. But I think if we are reinventing ourselves, then we can keep going. I know that I won't do the same thing forever because I like new and different too much. So, and I'm well aware of that. Nothing that I do will last forever because I will keep innovating because I'll get bored otherwise. You know, I'm really interested in how I can bring product into like physical product into my business because I love pretty things, but also it's a different audience. It's a different way to make money. You know, Joanna earlier, Ron was saying, you get to a certain point and you have to do something different in order to get to the next level. Well, I want to keep writing, so I'm like, well, okay, how can I bring product in, you know, and iterate around that way in order to keep growing, you know, so on and so forth. So yeah, I eventually all guards change, but I think if you want to stay where you are, you have to adapt and not stay where you are, if that makes sense.
And when you I was just thinking, like, what women have I seen do this? And I thought immediately, like, Octavia Butler, Margaret Atwood, Nora Roberts, all of these women, like, they embrace change, and they've always changed, and they've never tried to cling on to, well, I mean, Nora Roberts kind of gets queen status anyway, but she doesn't cling to it. She's always been adaptable to the market and wants to just write. And Margaret Atwood too, you know, just wants to write, and they move into the future gracefully. And I predict that all of us will do that if we want to.
I will never be graceful.
I'm not very graceful either. But
I claim grace.
So, Rachel, you rebranded your show.
Yes. Why did I do that?
Well, because this is something I'm wondering. I wonder, because there's a lot I love about my podcast, but to be fair, it's like nearly 15 years old. And this is a long time, and people have the same expectations of a show when it has goes on for a long time. And there are things I want to keep, but there are things I would like to change. And I was even wondering, well, the thing is, the creative pen is a good name because it can be so many things.
Yeah.
But there is a possibility. In fact, I did mention this in Vegas to Sasha. I was like, I could change my theme music.
It would, you know what? It was so refreshing, and it was so easy to do. You change the name and everything changes around it. And then it's supported at all the browsers. And I did that because I was feeling a little stale. I'm, you know, over 400 episodes, nowhere near yours, but I was feeling stale. Ink in your veins. I'm moving toward more of this fixing idea, because I'm obsessed with fix, the writing fix, the money fix, the fix about getting sober. And that has an undercurrent of addiction to it, you know, like you got to get your fix. Ink in your veins is about the fix of writing, and it felt more immediate. And also, when I did that and I changed the music, I just felt like I could do anything. And we don't owe anything to anybody, because if people want to come with us, they will come with us and support us. And if they don't, Godspeed. That means they should be somewhere else doing something else, right?
I do feel like I owe my audience a lot. Oh.
Do
and
you?
I'm very
Joanna, yeah, you have super... given them so much. You have given them enough.
But they...
That surprises me.
Oh, no, I take my responsibility very seriously.
I know you do, but that's different from thinking that you owe them anything more.
I owe them a show every week.
Look at our faces.
No, okay, Sasha and I are... looking at me quizzically.
You do not owe them a show every week. In fact, I might offer you this. Why don't you skip a show every once in a while because you don't feel like it?
I would never do it because I don't feel like it. I would do it if I... Oh, no, okay. I even did it through when I was sick with COVID.
I remember. Sometimes I just forget to post a show.
I'm so super responsible. But no, this is helpful because I do feel at the moment, you know, I think we've all been feeling it. There's a lot of change. I mean, a lot of things going on in so many different ways. And I am doing this kind of slow pivot that I want to figure out what that is by the end of this year. I'm 50 next year, which Rachel
rad.
Nodding, it is a big... It's a big birthday, you know, and I kind of want to be, I want my Gothic Cathedral project. I want to launch that next year and do some other things. But I was thinking, what could I keep that is the best of what people want from my podcast? So I'll probably do a survey or something and see what that is. Because I feel like, both of your shows, so Rachel's mainly craft, and Sasha's show is a lot of craft, but also business and marketing and all of that kind of thing.
Mistake was labeling it author. I wish I'd had Rebel, something that describes creative people, so that I could be slightly wider.
Well, you could rebrand it too.
Yeah.
It's so easy. I did not know it was so easy. You don't lose any of your subscribers. The feed stays the same. It just gets a new name that pops up in a new image and maybe a new song.
Mm.
Something for us all to think about. You don't have to give up everything. You can just rebrand and pivot.
And I would like to emphasize again that I do really believe that we are inviting people to come with us wherever we are going, with our books or our podcast or wherever we are. And there will be so many times where either I am not the right person for somebody, or I change and somebody thinks, oh, she's not the right person for me anymore. And that's 100% fine, because we're gathering other people who need us in that, or want to be along that journey with us in that moment. And we already know that about our books, right? I'm totally confident about my books. I do not care about 1-star reviews. That book was not for them. And we get to think about that in the way that we serve the writing community too. We cannot serve everybody, except maybe Joe. I mean, Joe, you come close. Sorry about that.
No, I don't. at all. I don't. And I think this is the thing, the wave of I've suffered a few waves of hatred over the years, and
you have, you know, you have gotten it hard.
Well, it went away for a bit, but it seems to have resurged. And I, frankly, I just don't have the energy for it. Like, I'm just,
it doesn't matter.
Seriously, it's
keyboard warriors who say bullshit on the internet. They have no energy to write. As but soon as one becomes a keyboard warrior, they're
I think that's why I was talking about like how we feel when we've been doing this so long. It's like, do we have to be the ones who are taking that over and over again? Like, I had a lot of it in the early days of indie. You know, when I moved to the UK, 2011, 2012, boy, I got a lot of the anti-self-publishing massive backlash that happened back then, and the belittling and the comments and, you know, all of that stigma stuff. And now it's kind of a lot of the AI
stuff.
AI stuff. And it's just like, maybe I just create and not talk about the process of creating. But do you think we're even able to do that at this point? Or are we just all natural teachers and we just can't help ourselves?
I think that's what it is. Because I think all three of us get so much joy from it. The minute we stopped getting joy from that, from helping others and from teaching and from, and is the moment one of us or other friends in our sphere should say, you need to reevaluate. And we need to listen. And that's another reason to have this kind of community. I want you two to say, you are turning into a dick. I remember I was in 911 and I was working for the police, and one of the cops came up and he said to me, you know, you're turning into one of them. And the women that I was working with were just bitches 100% of the time. And that night I went and looked for another job. And then I went in, and then it was 911 for fire medical, which I loved. But working for the cops was breaking me. And I needed someone to say, you're going downhill. We need that. And neither of you are going downhill. Neither of you are.
I was
going
to say, tell me if I'm going downhill.
Both of you are beautiful and inspirational. And I think that all three of us are honest enough to be able to help each other out with that. However, dear listeners, probably not going to do that on air. That's a conversation we would keep off air.
I feel like that's a good place for us to stop.
Yeah. I'm so appreciative of both of you. What a wonderful chat.
Oh, no, I appreciate it too. I got some free therapy from my my people who have a lot of friends.
this was lovely. Oh, you know what? We should say, if people are joining us for the first time, Joe, where can we find you? Everybody knows.
The Creative Pen podcast.
The one person who's listening who may not have heard of you. And thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thanks. Thanks, both of you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Ink in Your Veins. You can reach me at my website, rachelherron.com, and you can also support me at patreon.com/Rachel, R-A-C-H-A-E-L, where I have all sorts of great stuff for writers for as little as $1 a month. And do sign up for my free writer's email list of encouragement at rachelherron.com/write. Now, get to writing, my friends.